defined by the article.
I'd like to call this meeting of the Legacy Division to order. Members and audience, please take your seats. We do have a quorum present. Representative Pepin, would you care to move the March 23rd minutes? I know you've been studying them for a couple of weeks.
Yes, I have. I would like to move, Mr. Chair, the minutes of March 23rd.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Today, we're going to go over the Legacy Division bill. Basically, we have already the three portions of it had discussion: the parks and trails, the heritage, and the clean water. I will shortly go over the changes that have come up since that bill. We'll also then go into the arts, history, culture portion if there is time at the end of the meeting, and I will be saying we will be done at 4:15 or sooner today. I do not intend on going over it, in other words. Also, we'll have, just to give you a little bit of a look at down the road what we will be doing tomorrow, we will have amendments for the three environmental pieces and public discussion, members' questions, discussion. Then we have our break. When we come back after that, the first Tuesday, we will be doing the arts, history, culture portion with amendments and discussion. And then on the Wednesday after our break, we'll be marking up the bill and send it off to environment, where it will be eagerly anticipated with open arms. He didn't hear. So with that, I will move myself to the other table here and ask Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, are you ready?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll start off by moving the DE1 amendment.
You need to move 1061 first.
I move 1061 first.
Okay. And then we need to approve the 1061. Okay. All in favor of approving 1061, signify by saying aye.
Madam Chair, we're just moving the amendment.
Oh.
Sorry, but we've got to introduce 1061.
Some of us want to pass the bill, but it might be a little...
Yeah. Oh, well, I was going to shorten things up.
Madam Chair, that would be real quick.
Yes. A little too quick? Okay. We move 1061, and your amendment?
We move the DE1 amendment.
DE1? To be heard, right? We're just hearing it today. We'll move it tomorrow.
Just for hearing today.
Right.
All right. Ready?
I think so. It's we're moving the DE1 to have it in the where the author wants.
Discussion.
Is there any discussion? Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
No, we got a vote.
We got a vote?
Yeah.
Oh. There's no orders here. Sorry. I apologize. That's right. I'm last burning that off, aren't I? All in favor of the DE1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. It is moved.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This may not be a perfect bill, but it is the product of a lot of time and effort by many members, staff, and groups. We've had many discussions and tried to work out differences. The bill draft was rolled out early, and there's been ample opportunity for discussion and suggestions. In the last biennium, Representative Murphy did a fine job. Now, understandably, we have a new majority and a new chair, and we may reflect some different priorities. We had a provision in last year's bill that no one should expect as baseline what they received, and that receiving funding once is not a guarantee into the future. There are more changes now, and there will be more changes in the future. I particularly am seeking, if there's any part of this bill that still is incomplete, it's the section on administrative cost. And we may not nail that down until the Tuesday after we come back from break. I am still seeking advice from members on what they think should be done with administrative costs. I had just today another conversation with Mr. Nobles and with others who are receiving funding who are expressing concerns about administrative costs. And so when we get to that portion of the bill, we can discuss it a little bit more, but just let you know that we are still open to suggestions and amendments on that particular area. So we do welcome more testimony and discussion. We have time to make some tweaks. This bill is put together based upon our values, interests, and priorities. Now, just to everyone in the room, I want to say to remember that, you know, this is extra money. I mean, we have a $5 billion deficit in this state, and we need to thank the people of Minnesota for the foresight that they had in passing this constitutional amendment. But it is extra money. My goal was to be fair, to provide accountability and transparency to the public, and to see that this money does what the people of Minnesota intended to do. And so with that, I'll begin going through the bill, doing it in several stages. First of all, I'll discuss any. We did have before the three parts, the three environmental pieces explained. I will discuss any changes that were made in the parts of the bills that have already been heard, and then go through the bill itself. So, with that, the portion on clean water. The changes from the bill that you heard before are these. The availability, first of all, in each of the accounts, it's now over 2 years except for Lessard Sand. So each of the three of the four categories are over 2 years. Availability of funds extended to 2 years. Technical amendments are made to availability of funds for the PFA program. These are lines of 34.32 to 34.34. Removal of the term project that followed improvement in the Duluth Harbor St. Louis River appropriation, line 36.5. There's a technical correction to the amount for TMDL research and database development to match the spreadsheet, line 36.26. The addition of county to SSTS implementation funds, line 40.22. Removal of redundant public engagement language, lines 11.27 to 11.32 of the DE1 amendment. This should have been dropped the last time around due to the overall section at the end of the article. And there is modification of section 19 to limit administration, indirect, and other institutional overhead charges to 5%. This is done for all funds but the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which has its own prohibition on the use for direct cost. Regarding the parks portion, the parks and trails, notice that the Vets Park is taken out. This is one of these in and out, out and in provisions. We're taking it out of parks and trails. It wasn't, upon further review, I think we had some legal difficulties with that. But by putting it into another account, another category, I think we can do it. And so you can expect that the Vets Park will make a reappearance in the arts, history, culture portion. LaSalle Lake is in the Parks and Trails provision. It is funded in part by the LCCMR and Lassard Sams, and now $2.1 million, I believe, is the amount out of Parks and Trails, taken 40% from DNR, 40% from the Met Council, and 20% from the grants program to fund the last piece of LaSalle Lake. The division of funding, DNR 40%, Met Council 40%, the grants program opened statewide 20%. We've also included in this $175,000 for a study to be done of the Greater Minnesota Park System needs. It will come out of the grant program, and the administration is a little bit up in the air on that one right now. Will probably be an amendment to, well, there is an amendment on that, but there may be a tweak to that amendment yet. And then we also have the Lassard Sams and Representative McNamara. Are you aware of any changes in Lassard Sams in this bill from when you presented earlier? Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Erdahl. There are some changes in the DE1 from the original original bill when I brought it to the committee. The 20% to put into a fund for all the land acquisitions are now identified in each of the individual projects. And then it clarifies what the land management count will be used for. It specifically states that it what the use will be. And then it adds, additionally, Madam Chair, it adds Forest for the Future Conservation Easement account. It was a thing that was proposed by the DNR, and there are some technical cleanups to accommodate the easement account, and then it was the previous amendments that we adopted. Never at all.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative McNamara. So this brings us to the portion of the bill that we have not had a discussion on, which is the arts, history, culture portion. Which is on page 54 of the bill. Now, let me just say that it's not always easy just giving away money. And I suppose that's easier than having to cutting money, but used to watch a TV show when I was little, maybe some of you remember it, called The Millionaire, where the millionaire would give $1 million to somebody. John Beresford Tipton was his name. And then you would follow the character through the movie or the TV show on what he did with the money that he received. And some spent it wisely and some didn't. And that's kind of, you know, it's how some of us feel with this. But it started out last session, I think, on this particular account, Representative Murphy, you had about, round-off figures, about $48 million. And this year, it's about $50 million. So we have got a couple million dollars more. But the requests that we had were over $90 million. So most of the people who, or the groups, excuse me, most of the groups that received money last time were substantially increasing what they were asking for this time. And my goal was, wherever I could, in working with people and putting this together, to try to maintain what was received in the last year of last biennium, or to increase it slightly. In some cases, some reductions were made, but for the most part, we were able to hold where it was or slightly increase. And we did add a couple of areas that had not been funded before. We also made some substantial changes in language.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
As you're going through this bill, would you like questions as you go, or would you like to deliver the whole bill or the arts first?
I think we can take questions as we go.
Okay.
So, starting on page 54. There's the funding for the first and second years of the biennium. The goal here is to increase accountability and transparency. Now, following through, I can do it each one, but arts and access initiatives. 16.5 million. You see what that is for. Arts education on 55.34, 3.45 million. On page 1,080,000. Each year for arts and cultural heritage. And the administration, fiscal oversight and accountability, $634,000. We ask that the Arts Board maintain a census of Minnesota artists and artistic organizations. 30% of the total appropriated to each of the categories established in this subdivision is for grants to the regional arts council. To get the money out into these regional areas. This does not apply to administrative costs. Department of Education, $3,455,000, going to the 12 Minnesota Regional Library Systems to provide educational opportunities in the arts, history, literary, arts, culture, heritage of Minnesota. I know this, again, was a an area that was very important to Chair Murphy in the past, and you know, tried to, I think, at least put some substantial funding into there. I think it was well received throughout the state of Minnesota with the many libraries. Minnesota Historical Society, $12,250,000 each year. And bump this up just a little bit. And we all may have our biases here and there. Of course, I do have an interest in history. But the reason for a little bump this year is because of the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and the sesquicentennial of the Dakota conflict, which will be covered in this biennium, both of these events. Actually, the Dakota War is part of the American Civil War. And I particularly wanted funding for that if the Historical Society chose to use some there. But also, I wanted to bump up the area where the grants go out into the local historical societies, the local communities, and so we increased the grant amount in that area. So, and statewide historic and cultural grants, lines 5731. Actually, you can anticipate some few, when we do an amendment for this, there will be some minor adjustments in the amounts in these areas. Programs, $4 million. History partnerships, 5817, $1.5 million each year to preserve and enhance access to Minnesota's history, cultural heritage in all regions of the state. The survey of historical and archaeological sites, $275,000. Digital library, $475,000. In Department of Administration, for the administrators of grants to the specified organizations, named organizations, is $8,460,000. Public television, line 5927. $3.9 million each year. Minnesota Public Radio, $1 million. Ampers, $1.5 million. The zoos, $400,000 the first year, $400,000 the second, for $200,000 grants to Como Zoo and Lake Superior Zoo for programmatic development. Children's museums, we have four of them, and each of them receive $250,000 a year. Science Museum, $500,000 the first year, $500,000 the second year. King Tut's rent was pretty high. Minnesota Film Board, $320,000, $160,000 a year. Minnesota Zoological Garden, $700,000 each year. The Humanities Center, $1,075,000. And what we did a little differently, first of all, the Humanities Center, $225,000 each year. But in terms of the councils, what we are doing is giving $500,000 the first year and $500,000 the second through the Humanities Center as a competitive grant program for the Asian Pacific Minnesotans, the council, on Black, Minnesotans, Indian Affairs Council, and Chicano Latino Affairs Council. So some may get more than they got before, some might get a little less, and some, maybe all of them will get the same. An area, again, that Chair Murphy funded in the last biennium, civics education, learning law, and Democracy Foundation, Kids Voting Minnesota, each are receiving funding under this through the Humanities Center, but this is not a competitive grant for these groups. It's they are delineated as to their amounts. Purpage Center, $725,000 each year. I should add, one of the film board was newly funded this year. Another newly funded is the Department of Agriculture, $1.4 million each year for the county fairs. Grants to county agricultural societies to enhance arts access and education and preserve and promote Minnesota's history and cultural heritage.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I have a question about this.
I said Purpage Center, didn't I?
You did, but just as a coincidence, the Department of Agriculture is right beneath that. And what's interesting, Representative Erdahl, of course, is Purpage Center is more of a service for your community than it is for mine. The question I have is, the only bill I recall hearing on the county fairs was for capital-type construction. I think that's the only thing in there that they mentioned was booths or grandstands and that sort of thing. And I wonder if you have language here that deals with the question of, yeah, education centers, arts buildings, performance stages. That seems to me the capital funding. And, you know, I think this money should go for operations rather than for capital. I wonder if you could comment on why we're doing that for county fairs.
Representative Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, I would the goal in this is not to do capital funding. So if you want to prepare an amendment that deals with how you think this money should be used, I would certainly look close to that.
And
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl may work on that, but I just want to point out that the total appropriation for the Purpage Center is $1.45 million, and the total appropriation for the county fairs is $2.8 million. And the Purpage Center had a well-developed plan about how they were going to use this funding to incorporate the arts into curriculum for schools in greater Minnesota. And the county fairs, as I recall, didn't have a terribly specific set of proposals in mind. And so, you know, my inclination would be to tend to favor proposals where there's a specific program and a specific set of outcomes that they want to achieve. But just comparing apples to apples a bit, I'm not sure that the numbers come out the way I would have thought reasonable. And remember, that money was not for kids in my district.
Representative Erdahl?
Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Winkler, we got a lot of county fairs out there. And, per fair, they're probably not going to get all that much money. But, again, we're willing to look at this. We have the amendments for this bill won't be until after we come back. I would suggest you talk with me, perhaps Mr. Schoenfeld, who brought this forward, and also Representative Torkelson, whose bill this is, and we'll see if we can find something that works a little bit better. I'm going to suggest
Representative Torkelson has a question. Yeah. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought since the county fair bill was my bill that I should respond at least briefly to Representative Winkler. I don't remember the exact number of the request, but it was, I believe, somewhere around $6 or $7 million. So it's substantially less than the request. And as far as the capital situation, I do believe that with these funds, we have done some capital work, and I'm struggling to remember. I'm getting my funds mixed up here briefly, so I'm going to hesitate to make any particular remarks. But we certainly will have a discussion about potential amendments to this section.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wiggins.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I'm grateful to hear that there's might be some potential amendments. I go to the Douglas County Fair every year, no matter what the weather. And there are things there. There's an old schoolhouse that's historical, cultural, and it never changes every year, and I keep thinking they need to update some of their exhibits and bring some new things in, and I think that's perfectly appropriate for this historic building, and it is our cultural heritage. But when I look online, 6312, that it could go to agricultural education centers. I am having trouble figuring out if they are arts or culture.
Representative Wiggins, were you directing that toward Representative Torkelson?
He would be a fine person, Madam Chair, to answer the question.
Representative Torkelson, would you like to respond?
Thank you. I happen to think that agriculture is part of our cultural heritage, so that seems to be a reasonable fit.
I would have to agree with Representative Torkelson.
Okay.
Go ahead, Representative.
All right,
Erdahl.
Line 63.22, the Indian Affairs Council. Here we get into the language immersion projects. $875,000. Language working group, language preservation, education, language immersion. I think they have been doing a fairly remarkable job in trying to save some native languages in Minnesota. I believe, last I heard, you can nod at me if I'm correct, that we had 8 Dakota native speakers left. And so we're trying to, through this, to increase that. I don't want to see a language completely lost to history. Then $6,000 to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And we get into the reporting. On page 64, public television, on line 64.26, wanted a change that affected them more directly to offer free classroom use of programs produced with these funds. They maybe don't have the capability or the legal permission to offer free public performance rights. On section 4, line 65, we're going to do the reporting here. This is all on public television reporting. Section 4, Section 5, and Section 6. On page 66, we get into general provisions of all legacy funds. And once again, the goal here is to increase accountability, transparency. The public and the members of the legislature should be able to follow the money and the people involved in decisions regarding funding in an easily accessed manner. And so we, under Article 5, we did have a website that has been up and running throughout this session. There are certain things that we added in the reporting criteria for the various groups. You see them listed here. Fairly extensive expansion of what we expect in reporting. On page 67, again, talk about full-time equivalents. We, in line 67, give some time reference to when we expect the reports to be posted. Page 68. Now, for each of these, I'll go over the changes here. 68.12. A state agency or other recipient of a direct appropriation from the Parks and Trails Fund must compile and submit all information for funded projects or programs, including the proposed measurable outcomes and all other items required under Section 3.303, Subdivision 10, to the Legislative Coordinating Commission as soon as practicable or by the deadline specified in the enabling law, whichever comes first. The Legislative Coordinating Commission must post submitted information on the website. Now, priority for grant proposals, as we've had before, must be given to proposals involving grants that will be competitively awarded. Now, here is each of the accounts has something similar, and I'm just going through them with Parks and Trails. 68.27, a state agency or other recipient of money from Parks and Trails Fund shall, when applicable, prominently display on the state agency's or other recipient's website homepage a link to the Legislative Coordinating Commission website required under this section. And the link must include, in some place, the legacy logo. So the idea is that you can access the Legislative Coordinating Commission website through the agencies. If you could go into the PCA website, if they've received any money from the legacy funding, the logo would be there on the PCA or DNR or Humanities Center, whatever, and you would be able to click on to that logo and be the link would then take you, or you'd be taken to the link that would explain how the money was spent from that department or that agency or that group. Future eligibility for money from the Parks and Trails Fund is contingent upon a state agency or other recipient satisfying all applicable requirements in this section, mm-hmm. as well as any additional requirements contained in applicable session law. In other words, if you don't fulfill the requirements, the criteria that have been established, it could jeopardize funding in the future. Seems reasonable. On page 69, 69.3, a state agency or other recipient of a direct appropriation from the Outdoor Heritage Fund must compile and submit all information for funded projects or programs, including the proposed measurable outcomes and all other items required under Section 3.303 to the Legislative Coordinating Commission as soon as practicable by the deadline specified in enabling law, whichever comes first. Um, I think, I mean, for the next one, the same type of information is required of the Clean Water Fund. And on 70, the Arts Cultural Heritage Fund, it just repeats what I went over before, and I must have missed the Heritage Fund earlier. The administrative cost. I must have skipped over this somewhere. But under the administrative cost, what we're doing is 5% of administrative cost, which includes indirect cost. And that has created a little bit of angst here and there, and that's why I'm saying that the door isn't closed. We need to do a little bit of discussion on that yet, but still, I'm trying to find a consistent way that reaches the needs. I mean, we want to make sure that this money is spent the way it's supposed to be spent, that there's not a lot of indirect cost, there's not a lot of administrative cost, but by the same token, we don't want to see groups that are basically overspending in their administrative costs, or taking the money from other funds that really is not the way it's supposed to be done. On the page 71, 7126, the important point, a recipient of money from a legacy fund must comply with Minnesota Constitution Article 11, Section 15, and may not substitute money received from a legacy fund for a traditional source of funding. Everyone needs to be cognizant, and that should be a primary thought as each dollar is spent of this money. And then we have on the last page, again, the reports, when they're due by January 15th, at the top of the page. And then we have this little ditty that we have at line 7213. An appropriation or portion of an appropriation from a legacy fund is canceled to the extent that a court determines that the appropriation unconstitutionally substitutes for a traditional source of funding. Any grant, contract, or similar agreement that awards money from a legacy fund must contain the information in paragraph A. So, I think that covers the highlights. And open up to whatever questions you have.
Committee. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, this Section 9 on page 72, the very last provision.
Section 9 on what?
Page 72, entitled, In the Event of a Lawsuit. When I read this, I read it as almost an invitation to a lawsuit. And when you put in place the mechanism or determine what happens to the funds if a lawsuit is successful, you just make it that much easier for a court to weigh in and make a ruling and say that, in fact, the legislature anticipated that this might happen. I wonder if you could explain more why you would want to include something like this. I mean, it seems to me it would be better to make sure that your bill doesn't create grounds for a lawsuit rather than to put a bright, shiny headlight on the fact that maybe you're expecting it.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Representative Whitaker. I don't think that the intent of this is to invite a lawsuit. I think in
the intent was to discourage not being an attorney. Perhaps we need to investigate how the courts would view that a little bit further. This Representative Torkelson's amendment, perhaps he would care to weigh in as well.
Representative Torkelson, your response?
Thank you. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV. really, it's, you know, as we thought about this, or as I thought about this, and lost, you know, litigation has been a subject of conversation around this building for quite some time in relation to these funds. And you try to think about what would be the result, or what is a possible conclusion if a lawsuit is brought forward claiming that supplanting is going on. And the easiest and most direct way to deal with it is to remove the funding from that particular section of funding. If we're not appropriating funds to that area, then no supplanting is going on. And the second reason behind this is to be sure that these funds don't get tied up in litigation. That if a court makes a finding, we get this money back to the legislature as quickly as possible, and reappropriate it to some other deserving organization or spending area.
Representative Winkler, do you have another question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess Representative Torkelson, it's just kind of curious to combine it with, on page 71, this Section 7 General Provisions, Subdivision 2, it's on lines 30 through 32 on page 71, which basically says that if you're going to get the money, you have to comply with the Constitution and can't substitute. But, of course, that's always true. You always have to comply with the law in order to administer any program. And these two together just, they look fairly defensive, as though, you know, we know that this is going to happen. And I would just be very careful about putting this kind of language in a statute or in session law or wherever it would end up without consulting carefully with some legal, not that there are legal experts on legacy constitutionality, but to the extent we have them, to try to understand what the effect of these things might be, because I'm not sure that a court, if it went along with the lawsuit and upheld or and ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, I'm not sure that the remedy would be to take away the funding from the legacy source, the legacy-based funding. I'm not sure what the remedy would be. And by doing this, you're kind of putting a remedy out there that makes it easier for somebody to go after it, potentially. Now, what I suspect the intent is to say, don't sue saying you didn't get enough, because if you do, you're going to lose your appropriation. But I'm not sure that that is exactly what the impact of this would be. So it just raises a red flag, both of those provisions do. And I think the time would be better spent making sure that the bill doesn't supplant as we move forward with both the budget and with this legacy bill.
Representative Wiginius.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Winkler said red flag, and I looked at this as the red flag amendment too, but I looked at it a little bit differently, and it was kind of the red flag in front of the bull for people who do not like spending of government money. It just strikes me as a huge invitation for lawsuits rather than to prevent them. Might have that unintended consequence, because there are people who did not like the legacy amendment, who voted against it in the public, and I hear them out there saying you shouldn't be spending this money, and I've certainly heard that, and perhaps others have heard the same thing. I do think the correct remedy for supplanting is to not have the funding, but I'm more worried about the red flag to the bull. I do think it's a red flag.
Okay.
A red flag to the bully, maybe that's...
The bully. Okay, are there any other questions? One thing to remember is that amendments need to be posted or will be posted on the website this afternoon. So if there's any web amendments. Is there any other?
After Easter.
Representative Erdahl? Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, the amendments will be posted this afternoon, so there's a time deadline?
It was 2:30 this afternoon, but it hasn't been posted because Kristen's here.
Good.
Well, may I say this, Madam Chair?
Yes,
Mr. That would be for the arts, or the, excuse me, the three environment bills that we've already looked at. The language and the arts, history, culture portion, the amendment deadline would not be until after we come back.
That's
okay.
That's what had me worried when you said this afternoon.
Right, right. Yes, I should have made that clear. Okay. So the amendments would be due for the Clean Water, the Westside Sams, and the Parks and Trails.
Yes.
Today, and the date for the cultural and the arts is next week, right?
You know,
after Easter break. Oh,
yes.
I've totally lost Easter break.
No, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if we do have a little time here.
Mm-hmm.
If there are some of the public who wish to testify today, keeping in mind, you know, there still are some amendments that are coming, so this may not be the final, but if there's some that feel comfortable, maybe can't be here later, or for whatever reason wish to take a couple of minutes today, we could do that.
Okay.
At least for...
We've got, we need to be done by 4:15, right?
Sooner would, I think, be,
sooner.
Be good if we
4
could.
O'clock? Okay.
I'm actually going to speak to librarians in Mankato tonight.
Oh, that's important. Okay. Is there members from the audience that would like to testify at this time? Maybe can't make it tomorrow? Or next week? Yeah.
They're a happy group.
Okay. Go ahead and step forward, and then would you please identify yourself for the record?
Madam Chair, my name is John Gibbs. I'm an elected commissioner with the Three Rivers Park District, and a little bit self-conscious about being the one who stood up and said, yeah, we can't be here tomorrow. But along with me is Mark Thiemig from Scott County and Greg Mack from Ramsey County, and if it would please your committee, we would just take a few minutes here this afternoon.
Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. All of the Metropolitan Regional Park agencies do concur in our support for the position of Representative McFarland's bill, 898, which recommends roughly 42% of the Parks and Trails legacy funds to the Metropolitan Regional Park System. And the legislature passed a law in 2009 requiring for the development of a long-range plan for legacy funds. And one charge that the legislature established then was to preserve and connect high-quality, diverse natural resources in areas with concentrated and increasing populations. So currently, the metropolitan area makes up about 54% of the state's population, and it's projected that nearly half of the state's population increase in the next 25 years will come from the metropolitan area. With the increased cost of gas, as we're all experiencing, we think it's important, perhaps even more important, to develop recreation opportunities for people that are close to home. And we certainly know that the people in the metropolitan area and in Minnesota generally love the Metropolitan Park System. In 2010, there were over 40 million visits to the regional parks in the metropolitan area. Only the Mall of America gets more visitors. And you can compare that number with about 8 million visits to the state park system. In addition to population, the metropolitan area generates roughly 64% of the state's sales tax. And the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund is really one of the categories, of the only categories really, that the metro residents can see the outcome of their investment at work for them. So we think it's a good investment. We have a track record. The system was established by the state in 1974. Many of the agencies were in existence prior to that. And we provide local investment and support to protect those investments. We work to preserve the resources that are so valuable in connecting our people with these great places. So on behalf of the Metropolitan Parks, we really wanted to urge you support the 42% traditional level of support from the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund that has gone to the Metropolitan Regional Park System. And with that, certainly I'd be glad to answer any questions or turn it over to Mark.
Does anyone have questions of Mr. Gibbs? Go ahead. Oh, excuse me. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question about this very interesting chart. I noticed that Metropolitan Regional Park Systems facilities are in italics, bold. There's some things that are bolded, not italics. What does that mean?
Madam Chair and Representative Green, allow me to take a look at that, and we will get back to you before our testimony is done.
Okay. Ready? Mr. Gibbs? Representative Dill?
Thank you very much. I'm looking at your chart here. I see the Mall of America at the top. Wow, that's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But then I've also heard that Cabela's is a huge attraction in Minnesota, but I don't see it on here. And it would seem to me that they probably have over 253,000 visitors. But could you talk to that? Because I guess unless I missed it, I don't see it on here.
Yeah,
it seems to me that the rest of everything else is virtually publicly owned here in some way or another, except the Mall of America. And I've just heard over and over and over again that that's a huge attraction, so I'm wondering where that falls in this.
Not sure, though. I do know that the parking lot is busy whenever I drive by.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Okay. All right.
You can move the other chair
up. He might bite, though. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Greg Mack. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for Ramsey County. And I came forward in front of Mark Thiemig just to respond to specific questions on the two-page handout. If you'd like me to address those, I could.
Sure, go ahead.
Mark, proceed. The items that are in bold were actually, this is compiled, first of all, by the Metropolitan Council staff. So with respect to what's included in the list, they worked with the Department of Tourism to get the information. If the Cabela's store is higher and it's not reflected here, I don't know the basis of that. This is a report they handed out. The bold are just to identify, if you look on the list, which ones were parks within the regional park system. So they're identified as that. It was, again, compiled by the Metropolitan Council staff, so that's the reason why they're bold.
Thank you. Hello, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Thiemig, and I work for Scott County in their Parks and Trails program. And I'm here to talk about four items that are more technical related to the bill. The first one, from the regional park agency's perspective, is we're excited that the bill includes funding to help the greater Minnesota regional park agencies establish their system plan, help them establish their identity and determine some of their needs and some of their long-term plans. There's a couple recommendations that we would ask the committee to consider. First, perhaps there's a third party that could assist them, whether it be the DNR or the University of Minnesota in doing that plan. There was a lot of work. That's great. Okay, mm-hmm. That's great. And then the second, I think I heard at the beginning, we didn't feel that $100,000 was enough for that plan. So, okay.
That's it's being amended. Great. So, thank you.
We don't know what the number is. We didn't think that was quite enough.
Stay tuned for tomorrow.
Excellent. Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's two other items. One item that we'd ask the committee to consider is extending the time to expend the funds to 3 years. It's currently in legislation for 2 years. I'm sorry. All right, excellent. Wow, this is easy. The third item, which may already be in the bill, maybe I should ask, is that in the 2009 legislation, there was an allowance for a match to federal funds to be extended to the length of time that the federal funds have to spend.
You're going to like tomorrow.
I am 3 for 3. I like this. All right, the last one's not so easy. We really, as Commissioner Gibbs mentioned, we really believe that the 42-42-16 allocation that was proposed in the governor's budget is reflective of the needs and reflective of where the funding goes. If you remember from previous testimony, 90% of the DNR allocation is invested in greater Minnesota. And if you take out the solar grants that were funded in the last biennium, 88% of those Parks and Trails grants also went to greater Minnesota. So when you look at the percentages, there's a significant investment. As the greater Minnesota folks, as their plans take shape, they'll have a better feel for their funding, and that could potentially change. The other item we want to just touch on is the earmark for the LaSalle project. We think that's really important, but we're concerned about earmarks in this bill. We've worked really hard as a coalition to avoid earmarks and to try to make sure that funding for projects comes from the existing infrastructure and the existing processes. And so we're concerned about the earmark being in there because that opens the door to folks like Scott County or other folks to circumvent the existing processes that are in place. And so we'd ask you to consider that piece of it, whether the DNR can fund that out of their existing allocation or proposed allocation is something hopefully the DNR can answer. So those are the three items that I have. Two or four, five.
And 3 out of 5 is not bad.
Done. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thamig.
And Chair, yes. Again, my name is Greg Mack, and I'm Director of Parks and Recreation for Ramsey County. And I am here also to speak in favor of a bill that would have an appropriation that would be the 42% for the Metropolitan Regional Park System and 16 for the certified grants program, which would leave then 42 at the state level. There is a bill that Representative McFarland House filed at 898 that identified that. I did also circulate this came prematurely because it came up. This came around with the list of top attractions, but coincidentally, the Metropolitan Council last Tuesday released the numbers for 2010, and we look for those every year, and it just happened to be this past Tuesday. The extraordinary news is that we've seen a 7.4% increase over 2009. Probably with a lot more stay-at-home kinds of recreation activities that are going on. Probably today, as gas prices are going up, we might see even more of that. But we transcended the 40 million mark of visitors in a year, which is very significant from our perspective. You'll see there's quite a bit of detail in this report, and any one of your favorite metropolitan regional parks can be identified. You can see what who else is using it with you, or at least the number using it with you. Significantly, the growth in this system has increased 23% since 2004. So in the 6 years, in the top attractions that I distributed, you'll note that five of the top 10 in terms of visits are from parks within the Metropolitan Regional System. I'm proud to say that Ramsey County is one of those agencies that all of our regional parks and trails are on this top 70-some list. We operate four that are in the top 30. That's Ramsey County. Each of those serves more than Itasca State Park. Our top priority projects in this round of legacy funding is to look at Grass Badness Lakes. which is number 26 on that list, serving about 585,000 people a year. And that actually exceeds what Gooseberry State Park is, which is the number one state park visitation area. The report also underscores previous testimony offered by the implementing agencies, both today and in previous hearings. We serve the most visitors of the collection of agencies that do state parks and regional parks. Over 80% are served in our metropolitan regional system. We generate about 64% of the sales tax and house over 54% of the state's population. There was a study done in part of the legacy planning for this last round of preparing a master plan for legacy parks and trails funding. And the DNR prepared the study and said that total regional parks, state parks, per million people in the metropolitan area, there were 19 per million. So the most densely populated, there were 19 in that area. Compared to a statewide average where there were 46. So if you look at the greater state, 46 parks per million versus 19. So we have, these are regional parks and state parks as I look at the collection. Similarly, if we look off into the future with our population, the number we would have, given the projections of 2035 growth, is going to be 16 based on that population, 16 parks per million. So we're not, it's not an oversaturation by any stretch. Total state and regional park acreage, which is another factor that they compiled, is per million people, was 20 in the metropolitan area compared to a statewide average of 61. So about a third, if you compare it to that. In summary, we believe that the allocation of the 42% to the state, 42% to the metropolitan regional system, and 16 for a statewide regional grants program is a fair allocation that equitably serves all of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. And if you have questions, there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mack. Does anyone have questions from the testifiers? Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Is there anyone else that would wish to testify?
I would like to respond to that.
Oh, yes, go ahead. Thank you, Representative Riddell.
Yeah. Thank you, and thank the folks from Three Rivers.
Just a second.
Can you talk? Yes, you can, but I'm trying to decide if I want to talk first.
Oh.
It's okay. Let me just do what I'm going to do, and then because these thoughts might be lost if I wait here. Just briefly. First, I think it's again thanking the folks from Three Rivers because this is the item, this percentage split that really was the most contentious item in putting together this bill and probably took more of my time than anything else because you have a lot of folks on both sides. I mean, I can say that, you know, trying to come up with a solution that I thought was fair, you know, certainly, I mean, just on the face of it, the funding for the DNR and separately, the DNR and Met Council portion, each is twice that of what's available in the grants program if the entire grant program went to Greater Minnesota, which it doesn't. You can argue, the argument is given that the state parks, which are primarily in Greater Minnesota, are for Greater Minnesota, but roughly half of the people who attend the state parks do come from the metropolitan area. And also, yes, there are more people attending regional parks, but the fact is that Greater Minnesota's regional park system is still in its infancy. And until it can grow, naturally, there are going to be more people in other parks. So what we're looking at here is trying to put more money in the grant program to try to grow the system in greater Minnesota, and still giving the majority of the money to, you know, 80% of it in this case, to the DNR and to the Met Council. And frankly, I don't know that either side is happy with the 40-40-20 approach that we've taken. And so if no one's happy, maybe I've done the right thing.
Okay. Mr. Larson, would you like to testify?
Madam Chairman, members, I apologize for, I thought it was going to, thought there would be another testifier. But Dan Larson, today representing the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition, here to address the Delete Everything Amendment and to express that we are not opposed to the Delete Everything Amendment, the 40-40-20, although we do have some concerns. I think Representative Erdahl did a good job of wrapping up what those concerns would be, but I did want to get on the record, given the previous testifiers. Representative Erdahl's testimony, he said he thinks not everybody is happy with the way the split came out, 40-40-20, and the 20% being non-exclusive to Greater Minnesota in the grant program. We would prefer that there would be a portion of the grant, that the grant program be exclusive to Greater Minnesota. We feel that the 40% of the legacy funds that the DNR gets is an exclusive portion, that the 40% in this Delete Everything that the Metro Parks get is exclusive to Metro Parks. It would be an exclusive portion to Greater Minnesota, and make sure that we get that into the record. The plan, the 25-year plan, recommends the legacy funds should build a statewide system of parks and trails. It does not say that to direct funds to places that already have a vibrant constituency, a place that has generations of history behind it. It does not say to direct funding to where the jobs are or where people make money or spend money. It says that it recommends that the legacy funds should be allocated to build a comprehensive system, statewide system, of parks and trails. So, thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Those are my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Does anybody have questions of Larson, Mr. Larson? Okay. All right. Thank you. Oh, Mr. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Larson, just a quick question about the other sources of funding for the for the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks. We've had testimony about the region, and I think they said roughly 10% comes from the state, and the other 90% comes from property taxes and user fees. The Greater Minnesota Regional Parks, as you said, are in their infancy, or maybe it was Erdahl who said that, but through this grants program, how much money is generated locally for the parks?
I think, Madam Chair, Representative Winkler, if I understand your question, if there's a match, are you getting at the match, the local match?
Madam Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Larson, not necessarily formally a match for the grants, but if you look at the total money going into Greater Minnesota Regional Parks, how much of that is from the state?
Mr. Larson. Okay.
Any idea? I'm looking at my deep thinker and my representative. I don't know.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. Larson, I think that would be a helpful piece of information to try to put together as we look at this.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Okay, thank you. Mr. Larson? Oh, Representative Murphy, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Larson.
Actually, excuse me, please, real quick.
Yes, Representative Murphy.
there's a card up there for Representative Larry Haas, and I forgot to announce to pass that around to members. So, he's ill, and appreciate if members would sign the card.
Okay, we'll pass that around.
Mr. Larson, you talked about your concerns with the 40% exclusive to the DNR, 40% exclusive to the Metro Council, and you said that you would like the 20% to be exclusive to the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. One of the things that was mentioned most often, especially in discussion of trails, was that trails were being built that weren't connecting to other trails. If there was an exclusivity on the parks and trails for the 20%, would we ever be able to connect the trails that are coming from the regional, Greater Minnesota regional trails to the state trails?
Mr. Larson?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I can take a shot at that. Do we have a trail professional in the audience that if you want to get any deeper? My thought on that is an exclusive funding source would be a constant funding source. If you're planning trails and parks, it's good to be able to count on a dedicated source of funding and some number that you can plan for your build out. My answer would be I hope so, but Chuck Wolken is in the audience. He's built the Wobegon Trail, among others. So why don't we hear from Chuck?
Mr. Wolken, welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, Chuck Wolken, Stearns County Park Director and then Vice Chair for Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Coalition. Regarding the question from Representative Murphy on trail connections, I think the past record has shown that Greater Minnesota actually can create connections into urban areas to state trails and to regional facilities. And I use as an example the Lake Wobegon Trail, which connects to the Central Lake State Trail. The Wobegon Trail then also connects to a regional trail in Morrison County, the Sioux Line Trail. And between them, basically all of those trails were instituted as county trails. Central Lakes Trails was transferred to the state of Minnesota. But there's a 125-mile system there that is basically was constructed with the efforts of counties and for regional facilities, and we hope very highly to extend the Lake Wobegon Trail into the St. Cloud area, which I know when you extend a mile of trail in the metro area, it can cost you $12 million. We're trying to go seven miles, and it probably will cost us $3 million. But we look at connecting an urban area to a regional trail that connects to a state trail, and I think Greater Minnesota has the potential for providing a lot of connections and linkages between urban areas and state trails, and maybe even between state trail and state trail.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
I'll follow up to that. Mr. Wolken, what about, though, the metropolitan trails going out toward Greater Minnesota trails?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I think there's an example even in Wright County where they're trying to hook up to metro trails, and Stearns County's trail system is programmed to hook up to Wright County's. And it really does get rather exciting when you look at some of the networks that the U of M has kind of identified in their inventory of regional and state trails, whether they're existing or planned. There's some great connections. You know, the fact that the state of Minnesota is top trail state in the country, it just looks like it'll get better.
You might add that I've had a couple of avid bicyclists who are members of the legislature comment to me that they would like to be able to, from the metro area, you know, hook up with trails and be able to go across the state of Minnesota.
Wow. Okay. Representative Torkelson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm referring back to a remark made by Representative Winkler regarding funding of metro parks, 10% coming from the state. I guess I would like to see that spreadsheet, if that's available. I don't need it right now, but if the metro parks folks could supply that information. There's a lot of information here about visits, but I don't see much information about the financial side. I do know that metro parks do receive bonding money, lieu money, I forget the proper title of it, the lottery and lieu money, parks and trails money, and other state funds, general funds. So I just would like to see that outline, and so we could look at that more closely, please.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Well, we are nearing our hour here to be done. So, Forrest, would it be all right if we had you start tomorrow? Representative Torkelson or Erdahl would like to wrap it up. So, should we let Forrest? Okay. Okay, Mr. Bow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today. And for the record, Forrest Bow, I'm the Deputy Director of the Parks and DNR's Parks and Trails Division. As you will recall, in the last biennium, there was not a formula set in statute, but a formula done by the numbers. And that formula basically worked out to 43-43-14. And over the last 2 years, we did understand that there did need to be more money going to the outstate grant program or to the grant program overall. And of course, that grant program's for not DNR is not eligible, but Greater Minnesota Park and Trail providers are, as well as the Met Council. And to that end, when we formulated the governor's budget and the governor's recommendation, working with the governor's office, we recognized that. And so the governor's recommendation is 42-42-16, which, of course, the DNR supports. With that change in the percentages and also taking some of those monies that were identified off the top last biennium for various planning efforts, like the legacy plan and what the University of Minnesota has done, the grant program actually has a 39% increase over what was available in the last biennium. So a significant increase for the grant program, and we certainly recognize that. During the last biennium, we gave out 60 grants to various communities throughout Minnesota for over $8.5 million, and those certainly benefit those communities and benefit the overall park and trail system in Minnesota. We realize this committee's got some hard choices to make, and I think Representative Erdahl has hit it right on the nose, and it is about the allocation. I want you to know that under the governor's recommendation, we're set on a course to complete the prairie restorations, the forest restorations, the building rehabs, the trail rehabs, and increase the number of people that participate in the outdoors, basically doing more to connect people to the outdoors. And we're set on a course to meet all of those goals over the next 23 years. At the 40-40-20 level, we really need to reevaluate those and look at our priority legacy work. And we also know that the legacy funding will not meet all the needs of really any of the three systems, whether it's the Met Council system, the DNR system, or the Greater Minnesota system. And so these efforts of your work and your committee are certainly appreciated, and we will use these funds to supplement the existing work that all of these systems do. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Representative McNamara, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Director Bo. I'm just curious, in the grant program that you have, can you tell us a little bit about what's the criteria that you use to determine those grants? Who actually does the determination? What kind of a competitive grant process do you actually have that someone from the outside could think, yeah, this is a fair system? And I'm just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on that.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, all of our grant information is available on site, so if I miss some of the details, you can certainly go to the DNR website and look up some of those things. And I do have something on the grant program with me here today. And we have, of course, these grants are available for both parks and trails. And we talk about them being regionally significant. There's got to be evidence that the park or trail serves at least some kind of a regional clientele. It's so more than just one particular community. So it has to be a regional clientele. The park or trail has to be of significant size. And when we're talking about a park, you know, a park in southern Minnesota, probably because there's not a lot of public land, wouldn't need to be of the same size as a northern Minnesota park. So the size criteria is flexible, is what I'm trying to suggest here. When you talk about a trail, we want to make sure that any of these trails provide at least an hour of outdoor recreation opportunity. So again, it's not just a trail for a few blocks. We have a lot of other grant programs that can make those other trail connections from a park or to a school or those kinds of things. But this is really a recreational opportunity. We also have gift criteria for scarcity of recreational resources. So one of those criteria is we want to spread these legacy dollars around so that all citizens of Minnesota get to experience and benefit from the legacy dollars, and then also invest in areas where there aren't these kinds of recreational opportunities available. So those are, I guess, five out of the seven that we have available, or five out of the seven criteria.
Representative McNamara, did you have another question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do, and I hope I'm okay. I thought our committee was going to go till 4:15. So, Director Bo, you a number of times mentioned the we. Who is the we in the granting? Who actually decides to give these grants out?
Mr. Bo.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, the Park and Trail Fund grants are administered by the DNR's Parks and Trails Division. Our division reviews the grants according to the criteria that are laid out. We have staff in the division that scrutinize those, make sure they are following all the criteria, the environmental review criteria that are set forth with the grant applications, all of those things. And ultimately, those recommendations come to myself and our director, Cortland Nelson, and we do get approval by our commissioner for those grants. We want to run those past him to make sure that he understands where these grants are going throughout the state.
One last follow-up.
Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, Director, I know you don't live in rural Minnesota because you live in my district. But I was surprised to hear you say one of the criteria is the scarcity. It seems to me that these grants may be tailored more for outstate Minnesota, and so I just, as we go forward, if we're all supposed to be able to compete for these grants, I hope that we can be involved in the process of these grants so they can be very fair throughout the state of Minnesota. As I fought very hard for them to be for everybody, I would like them to be for everybody. So, thank you.
Mr. Bo, anything? Oh, Representative Murphy, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clear up something that you said. with the division of 40-40-20 as recommended in the bill, the parks and trails for DNR would still be getting more money than they had in the past, right? Am I correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that is correct. The fund has grown, and it equates to about a 15% increase over what was available during the last biennium.
And that, Madam Chair, Mr. Bowe, that's what you were referring to when you said that Representative Erdahl had it right on the nose when he was looking at the amount of money.
Mr. Bowe?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, what I was alluding to is Representative Erdahl's assessment that the real issue here is with regard to the split of the money. He understands that the friction point is with the split, whether it's 42-42-16 or 40-40-20 or some other formula.
But the 40-40-20,
Representative Murphy,
Mr. Madam Chair, Director Bowe, the 40-40-20 gives the DNR about 15% more money, the Metropolitan Council Parks and Trails about 15% more of the money, and the 20% would, since that's way above 14, that would give them more money than they had in the past to work with.
Mr. Bowe?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct. In the governor's recommendation, even at 16%, they have a 39% increase of dollars available from the grant program.
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, Director Bowe, at the time that the governor's budget was being proposed and talked about, Do you feel that the governor had a broad understanding of what happened with the growth of the Regional Parks and Trails Coalition and the amount of time that was spent in the previous committee on determining parks and trails for the whole state? And did the governor have, do you feel that the governor had a thorough knowledge of the past bill that allowed for the inventory and the plan that was to be drawn up by parks and trails for the whole state?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Bowe.
That's a very difficult question. I did not work directly with the governor on this bill. Of course, we worked through his staff. And I know that during that transition period, he is very busy trying to understand all of these budgets and all of the ramifications of the entire running a state. And so that would be a very difficult question for me to answer.
It was a very difficult question for me to ask also, but I know that
Representative Murphy,
Madam Chair, and up to this day even, I have never been consulted about the amount of time that the previous committee put on Parks and Trails and the legacy, nor the previous Environment Committee on Parks and Trails and how much they put in. But I know how much money we put in the bill, and I know what was the expectations and the talks about the planning and the talks about all the talks that took place. And I think that if the governor and the people that are now talking to the governor about the parks and trails refresh the governor's minds about all those things, that the 40-40-20 would sound pretty good.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Mr. Bowe? Oh, Yes, Representative Erdahl.
We're going to give Mr. Neumeister 2 minutes.
2 minutes. That's what we have. Thank you, Mr. Bowe. Mr. Neumeister, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to say thank you very much for the few moments of your time. Section 5 is a very important section, Article 5. This is the genesis of the bill. This is accountability and transparency. In 2008, you gave Minnesotans the opportunity to vote for the legacy amendment. Also, the people who voted for it and the majority who voted for it want to see how this money is being used. Chairman Erdahl has been very open to my ideas and suggestions. He's accepted some of them, and most, I think all of them, and with his original bill. And I think this will help the people for accountability and transparency. And if they see some things, they'll share those things with you, the elected officials. Various things in here, from reporting to make it easy to get access to information, conflict of interest statements, who are part of the groups, are these advisory groups, some qualifications to identify some of those. Those are very important. So, Madam Chair, I want to let you know that the chairperson has done a lot of good work in this area that doesn't get a lot of attention, but one, it's a very important one, other than just the money. But the accountability and transparency is a very important one for the people of Minnesota. So thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Chair Erdahl, I believe we are going to adjourn today with no action, and we'll pick up this bill tomorrow with more discussion. Correct? Meeting adjourned.